Hello, welcome to the Long Shot Leaders Podcast. I'm Michael Stein. My guest today is Chad Pipkins. Chad is a full-time bass angler for 10 years with the Bassmaster Elite Series. Do you like fishing? Do you wish you could do it full-time? Are you sitting there driving in your car and you're thinking, yeah, I'm happy doing X, Y, and Z, but yeah, I sure like to be out there on the lake fishing, getting paid to do it, living that lifestyle. Well, that's fascinating to me. I don't know. I just wanted to share another story with you. This guy's really cool. He's making it happen. Here is Chad Pipkins. All right. I'm here with Chad Pipkins. And I love this kind of story, you know, because a lot of people driving around the life thinking, man, I would like to do that. How did that guy get to do that? And we're going to find out. So Chad, tell us about, you know, where you're from, where you're born. Tell us about a little bit about yourself and what mom and dad do for a living. What built you?
Yeah, definitely the parents, man. The parents built me day one. They've been the biggest supporters I have. Mom's a teacher growing up. Dad worked for Farmers Insurance. Just two people that really embodied like just hard work and making the most out of what they had. And that's kind of how I've built my career. You know, it's just hustling and grinding and, you know, what are we going to do to get to the next step? And, you know, how to make it happen. I grew up here in Michigan, in Holt. Right now I live in just north there in DeWitt, but love it in Michigan. I mean, we have some cold winters and whatnot, but just enjoy being up here for the seasons and real fortunate that we're able to travel and kind of, you know, see the country and stay warm when we need to, you know, for the rest of the season.
Did you, obviously, you know, not obviously, but like, were you fishing as a kid all the time or what was that like?
Yeah, that's kind of how I got the itch. I mean, my parents had a place up on Higgins Lake, so I never really grew up bass fishing like the kids nowadays with all the club fishing and high school and college stuff. I mean, they know more at 10 or 12 than I did when I was 20, you know, but I just grew up with the passion to fish and used to catch perch and rock bass off the dock. Used to have a little rowboat. We'd row out to the drop off. And if my dad saw us, he'd pull us out in the jet ski, like tie a rope up and pull us out there so we didn't have to waste our arm strength. And that's literally how I grew up fishing. And then kind of started fishing my friend's ponds, bass fishing when I was a kid, and just was addicted to that. And a buddy of mine's dad took me my first tournament when I was 16, and I was done, man. It was like sports, competition, speed, a little bit of gambling, outdoors, and it was all wrapped up into a tournament bass fishing. And I love it. Still do to this day. It's bad.
It's crazy that it's still, I every time I hear it, your major, you could take an elective at school in high school, bass fishing.
Yeah, they've got bass fishing is a high school sport now in a lot of places. There's at one of our schools here, I can't remember the college. It's like a arts kind of school. You can get a fishing scholarship. Like they have a paid fishing coach. And I think all this really took off literally when I got done with college. So it all worked out fine. I speak for a lot of the high schools and colleges, but man, I'm a little bit jealous because those guys, I mean, they get to do what I wanted to do then. So it's pretty special how all the opportunities they have now.
So you end up, how do you segue into this? Cause they're not, you know, now people it's self-evident, but back, you know, when you started, it was like, can I do this for a living or how does that work? You know, when did that start to really, what got introduced to that?
For sure. Now there's definitely an easier path, you know, with everything that's there with even social stuff and whatnot. But when I started, you know, I didn't really know what was available, but I knew about the Bassmaster Elite Series. I knew that there was guys that fished for a living that made money and that was their job. And, you know, growing up, I loved sports. I played every sport you can play did a lot of everything and never really focused, you know, even going into college, I played hockey at club college for 4 years and had a lot of fun, but would fish hard and work really hard in the summer. But I never really fully switched gears to like, I'm all in until I got done with college. I had my backup plan. And that's kind of when I realized like it was possible. I didn't even really know what exactly how I wanted to get into it, but I fished one tournament as a co-angler like the year I got done with college, and it be honest, it probably changed my life because I had taken a job in North Carolina to teach because I wanted to get south so I could work on fishing a little bit more. And that year though, I fished one event as a co-angler on Lake Erie and met like a guy named Shad Skank, basically a mentor of mine that I ended up traveling with for 5 years. And I helped him out in Lake Erie a little bit. And then he just showed me the ropes like of the tournament. He's like, if you want to do this for a living, you know, you got to bust your butt and work hard. It's important to have money coming in, but you know, you want to ride with me next year. You can travel with me. I can, you know, help with some expenses. You can work on building your businesses at home, which is a big player because what you see a lot in our industry is you get in, you run out of money and you're out. So you got to be able to financially support yourself in order to get to that next step. And he did a huge thing for me and helping me out with that process.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to jump ahead too much, but here, but it, you know, so people understand that don't know a lot about bass fishing, which is an extremely fast growing sport. And I want to, that's really want to kind of ask that. But before we get that, you have to have your own business, or it helps have your own business. You're not just depending on like the winnings, you know, because it's endorsements, it's your own business. What does that look like for you?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely like on the upper end when you're there, like you can make, there's guys that make seven figures doing it. A lot of the guys make good money, but it's like to get there, you got to build your business. You don't just start off with a multi-million dollar business. You have to sweat, tears, blood, whatever you got to do to get there. And sometimes that's about other businesses as well. So for me, when I started, like went to school, I mean, I was substitute teaching, ref and hockey on nights, weekends, doing construction, landscape. I started a paint company. I flipped my first house, got a rental property. I did retirement plan. Like I literally did everything 80, 90 hours a week to support fishing. I was still winning money fishing, but you're just traveling and you're spending so much money and time on the road to get better. The only way to go out there and learn to fish is to get beat by everyone. Like you can fish all your local lakes and you're great, but you don't get that process. You don't get that, you know, when the fish change, when the weather changes, every other, you know, variable across the country, you don't get that until you go out and do it. And unfortunately, you spend a lot of money doing that. And that's why you see so many guys get in, make some money, spend the money, get out, double mortgage a house. You know, there's a lot of those stories that aren't told. You know, you see the stories of, look at this guy's boat and truck. And, you know, these guys make X amount of dollars, but what about the five guys that had to quit that year that went bankrupt or broke? You know, that's part of the reality as well.
I haven't kept up on what it's doing this year. And I'm a novice, you know, but I, you know, when it comes to a lot of this, but I'm fascinated with the industry. And it's also, you know, I look at all kinds of sports, you know, of, you know, as businesses, how they grow. What are some of the key points of why bass fishing is growing so fast? It almost seems like a good stock. That's like a penny stock that, yeah. You know, you're looking at that. That's what everybody's trying to find. Like the next NBA team, you know, it's like yeah. What's the next sport that's going to blow up? Soccer was one, but it's like, why is bass fishing growing so fast? What are some of the algorithms or what's creating that?
I think there's a couple of reasons. The main thing is it's everybody can do it. I mean, we do it in a boat, but you don't have to have a boat to do it. Like you can go out, like I grew up fishing for 20 years out of a rowboat on ponds, riverbanks, and you can catch a fish at any one of those places and you can catch giants at any one of those places. So it's pretty unique when anyone can go out and do what we do to some extent. The other thing is the biggest obstacle we've had in the past is you haven't been able to see the fishing live. Like seeing fishing live could be like watching paint dry live, but people watch NASCAR live and millions of people watch it. So it's like they make a show and an experience out of it. It's not like watching one guy when he catches, you know, five fish over the course of 8 hours. You know, you've got 100 guys out there. You've got cameras on 10 of them. You've got roaming cameras. You've got commentators. It's a golf event. It's a NASCAR event. It's a sporting event. And for the first time, I think it started in 2020. I mean, COVID, it was a big deal for everybody, but we were in a really fortunate position as fishing. A lot of other sports, you know, weren't able to play. And for us, we're isolating in our own boat. You know, so the main thing was being able to get to where we're going. And then we had a contract with ESPN2 at the time, and they needed content. So as opposed to getting a couple hours to air for each show, we were getting 18 to 20 hours, you know, 4 to 6 hours a day of coverage, live coverage. And a lot of people that never saw before loved it. And then fast forwarding to the next year, you know, the numbers were so good, we needed to keep that going. And, you know, ESPN2 couldn't commit to those times because they have so many other obligations with sports as well. So, you know, they Bass partnered up with FS1 and Fox Sports. And now we're on every Saturday and Sunday of our events. You know, we get 3 to 4 hours of coverage live. They've also got Bassmaster.com live. And it's just, that's helped grow the sport a bunch because for the first time, you can follow it.
I think that's the one thing. I have talked about this with some other bass fishermen. That's the one thing about bass fishing as a sport. It's like boxing and MMA. A fight can end at any moment. When you are a bass fisherman, when you're watching this on TV, anything can come out of that water. You know, it's like, what do they have? What's happening here? You know, that's the anticipation. Is that like that's the big moment, right? Do you think the viewer's like going, what's he going to pull in?
Yeah. And that's what you didn't get to see before when you were just watching a weigh-in or you're just watching, you know, people, the stats on there, like Bass Track's nice to see what people have, but it's nice to be there and you want to feel something. Like when you watch a TV show, you want to feel something, you want to have emotion. Well, you watching that, you get the emotion, and sometimes it's raw, sometimes it's doesn't come out clean because it's not supposed to. It comes out however we deal with what's going on. I mean, you catch, I caught an eight when I led in Texas the one year. I caught 32 pounds the first day, and then I caught my second biggest bass in my life, 31 pounds worth five fish, caught one almost 9 pounds all on camera. And I can't hold that in. Now, whether there's a camera there or not, I'm losing it. And the same thing goes for if you lose that fish, you're going to see that too. I mean, you see, the next day I caught 5 pounds. It was the biggest struggle I'd ever been through. And mentally, people are watching you go through that process. And that's how you get fans from that too. They're like, man, I like this guy. I like how they think. I like how they handle things and you know, just how they get through things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and the challenge, what about being a spectator sport? That's probably the biggest challenge for it, right? I mean, like, where do people congregate and how does that interaction go? Because it isn't isolated. You have cameras. It's perfect for TV. How about spectating sport as far as live? Being there.
It goes both ways, man. It really does. I mean, it's really awesome when you're out there. When I was leading, I had 20 some boats just kind of around. They're cheering for you when you're hooking them. They're watching you fight fish, and that's awesome. Then the other end of that, it can get tricky because it's not like we own the water. You know, I've never asked anybody not to fish, but there's times when you're out there with other anglers, guides on the lake, and you need to share the water. And we don't own the lake, you know, but there's a right and a wrong way to go about sharing the lake. We're there for a few days and, you know, you got to work together sometimes. And there's been times where, you know, people can get in your way and there's, you know, words on both ends, but in the end of the day, it's how you handle the situation. And for the most part, if you're talking to somebody nicely on the water and, you know, giving them the respect that they deserve, they're going to give it back. If you want to go out and fire off words about them being out there when they shouldn't be, well, they're going to treat you like you're treating them too. You know?
You know, I never thought of this. This is interesting. This is almost like, because, you know, there's like a big event at a lake and you got people that are like, there's like a sectioned off, you know, where there's attendance there, right? There's vendors. It's like, yes, an event, right? And then there's a crowd. But then you can't prevent, can they prevent, and in a tournament, they don't prevent certain, yeah, people from their own boat. So this is like the equivalent of somebody like, you know, running onto the soccer field and saying, I'm going to kind of play soccer with you now. Or like, I'm like running onto like, you know, baseball, football field. It's crazy.
100%. That's what's great. Like, or golf or NASCAR, like people just out there driving, and it happens. And that's most of the time it doesn't impact on who's going to win or lose, but there's times, and I've been in that situation, the tournament I led in Texas, everybody was so good there and I wouldn't have won anyway, but I was up by 10 pounds after 2 days and we happened to have a built-in off day. And there was the guy that owned the dock that I was fishing in front of. And I saw him at our like meet and greet the next day. And he's like, man, they're out there catching all your fish, right? I'm like, I don't want to hear that. We can't hear that. But there was guys that watched me fishing the day before that, since we had an off day, they went out and just smashed the fish on our off day. And the next day I went out and the fish had, because of that pressure, had repositioned. And I didn't find them until the day after that. And it's one of those, like, that doesn't happen a lot, but it happens enough where it made me a little bit sick, you know, but it is what it is. It's part of the game.
Let's say there's a tournament. You know, if they talked about that you're doing this in the future, somebody like, you know, an event planner, bass fishing, it's growing. You got a promoter of an event, you know, it's big sponsors. They get like Travis or Lake Buchanan or whatever, and they're going to section off a whole area to where only the fishermen can go in that giant area, you know, and be organized about it. Have they talked about that?
It would be really hard to do just because it's not owned by, like, it's public water. So as long as people have access to the lake outside of like police resources, you know, where they legally needed to do something, they can't tell you not to go somewhere on the lake. I mean, it'd just be really hard with the amount of space we need to, just like, you know, we fish docks, that fish live under docks. And there's a lot of homeowners that think they own the water under their dock. I mean, my parents have a place on a lake too. I always, first thing I do when the homeowner comes out, a lot of them are real nice and just want to chat with you, but there's some places that they're worried about that hook getting their kid's foot or whatever. And I get it, you know, or you messing up their boat, but they don't want you fishing your dock. And there's always a fine line with, again, how to handle that situation when you got people coming out screaming at you, trying to be respectful and diffuse the situation.
Right. One last question about that though, the bigger the sport gets and the county can sponsor it and say, hey, this is good for the county,
we're going to do this, the big event, and we don't want, you know, it's like, you can't be a part of this, you know, just for this day. I mean, is that, you know, I don't know. It seems like the more money that get, you know, the bigger this grows, maybe that will start to happen possibly. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
It would be cool. It'd be hard to do with how many ramps are on the lakes and how many like boats that are already there. How do you tell them not to take the boat out? But I mean, if they could limit a little bit, I mean, it's possible, but the main thing is just getting people aware. A lot of the controversy that happens, it's not with people that are out there watching you. It's people that don't follow our sport that close and don't know you're there and then don't really care too much, you know, which is, you know, I respect that, but it's just, as it gets bigger and grows, I think people will work together more and, you know, it won't be as big of a deal, hopefully.
That's an interesting dynamic. Where are you at today, right now in the sport? What's going on?
Man, I'm in a good place. And this is my 11th season full time. Somehow I've won an open to kind of get some money to make my first classic. I'll actually be fishing my sixth Bassmaster Classic here in a couple of weeks at a Knoxville. That's basically like our Super Bowl for fishing. I still haven't won one yet, man. There's a lot of people that fish their whole career and don't win. And we've got new guys that come in and just win. So I don't know why I haven't won one yet, but I'm waiting for my time and just keep working hard at it. But I feel like I've made a career out of it, you know, and I've got a family now that I support through fishing, and that's been my dream the whole time, you know, so I've got no complaints. I'm going to keep putting my time and hustling, and it's going to happen when it's ready to happen, I think. Hopefully.
I mean, there's not a certain age, you know, where that is limited in bass fishing. I mean, who's the oldest guy out there right now that's pretty big?
There, Rick Klun fishes with, he's actually over 70, but the guy's won multiple Angler of the Years. The guy's won multiple events, classics. I mean, he's one of the legends in our sport. There's also Kevin Van Dam, who's from Michigan. He's one of the greatest our sport's ever seen. He's in his 50s. He's retiring this year, kind of retiring on top. You've got a lot of young guys because of college fishing too. A lot of guys, you know, early mid 20s to 30s. But I feel like the sweet spot is, you know, that early 40s, just because you get your feet wet with it might take 5 to 8 years to get confident with how you like to fish. You also get a good general base of knowledge for all these different places we go. You get that failure experience at a lot of places. So you've seen more changes. And if you look, one of my buddies was like just a kind of like a statistics nut. And he said, people peak. That most of the roles that guys get on are mid 40s, you know, 40 to 45, 46, just because you're financially okay. And you're just fishing more free. In our sport, it's not about being the most fit always, the best caster. It's all what's going on between the ears and who makes the best decisions. And you make the best decisions when you don't have any distractions. When you are just doing what you love to do, I really say you don't even make decisions. You're just doing it. Like when you're out there not having a good tournament, you are literally fighting with yourself up here. Do I go here? Do I stay? Do I leave? When it's right, you just pick the trolling motor up, you roll, you just catch. Like, it's just so smooth. And it's the most amazing feeling when it's happening, and when it's not, it's not.
It's a metaphor for anything really in business or any sport. Yeah, you know, if you're
for sure,
you know, what's that, the Jerry Maguire thing, if the Dickie Fox, if this isn't right, or if this isn't, your heart's not right, your head, this isn't,
yeah, these head, are connected right. Very strongly. So yeah, that's for sure.
Why would somebody in decent shape in their 70s not be able to continue? I mean, decision making gets better as you get older, and you're less, apt to make impulsive, right? You know, your decision making is good. I mean, there's guys that can stay in shape. Is it that demanding if you got to pull in a big guy that, like, you know, a guy that's in decent shape can't do it? What are your thoughts on that?
It's a lot of stress and a lot of work to be on the road. Like, you don't just go show up and fish. I mean, I drive 30 to 35,000 miles a year, which is bad for me, let alone. And it's just the constant drag, you know, we're hunched over fishing, leaning, like, it's not good. Like, all of us have issues, shoulders, elbows. And then the hours that you put in, like when we practice, I'm out fun. Like, I don't go on vacation and fun fish. We get to practice 30 minutes before sunset and 30 minutes after sunset for official practice. In New York, it's late at about 5:45. I'm on the water at 5:20 and I get off the water at 9 PM. I put in 14 hours a day for those 2.5, 3 days. And then our tournament starts, you know, where you're up early. So like, there's not time to sleep. And then sometimes they're back to back. You get in the car and you drive 6 hours after you get off the water. So I feel like you definitely got to have some energy to do that. And, you know, it can wear you out. I mean, but the other side of that is, I mean, he loves it. That if you ask Rick about why he fishes, because he can't get enough of it. And I get that, because I feel that, you know, and I hope I'm not fishing when I'm 70, because I want to do a few other things with hopefully my grandkids and whatnot, and maybe go fun fish. But I mean, I get it. it's an addiction, because it's that feeling you get when you, like you said, you hook that giant, and the instant you get the bite from when, if you don't know if you're going to catch it, till when it's in your hand, weighing it in front of a crowd. I mean, it's amazing.
I mean, how many do you have to do, well, financial reasons, you're doing all these tournaments, but also it's training, it's monetary. And is it also making sure your name is out there in all these tournaments, you know, not being left out of the loop? Why do guys, some guys are more prolific than others with going to so many tournaments throughout the year?
Yeah, it's a little bit of each. I think our Bassmaster Elite Series has 9 events and a classic. That's the tour that you commit to pay. That's what's on TV. That's what your sponsors are paying you to fish. Outside of that, I still fish, three open tournaments as well. And other guys fish another open division or two just like that, because when I'm home, I've got some rental properties, a little painting company that I started when I was trying to fish. So I still run that stuff as well a little bit. But it's like, I don't fish a ton at home. So for me, I need to fish more. I need to be going through that decision-making process, not just in those 9 events. I need to be doing it, 3 or 4 more times a year, because when you see guys get on a roll, a lot of times it starts with, you go to an open, there's not as much on the line, you just kind of fish free, you make a good decision, and then all of a sudden you win one of those or have a top 10 or something that carries right over to your elite tournament next week. And you roll out there and you just start making good decisions. And it's about getting on that roll. And a lot of times it's being on the water that, that helps with that.
With the exception of the guys that are number one in the sport, cause that's easy, you're winning, you're going to get endorsements. You're going to get your business, whatever side business, if you're selling lures and all that, it's going to do well. But what about the guys that, are in the middle ground that are really successful? Is it just social networking? Their Instagrams are like other, or but what really pushes those guys? What moves the needle for those guys?
Yeah, and I think that's where I fit in a little bit. Like, I haven't done anything to set the world on fire yet, but I've been here, this is my 11th year. Like, I'm not a rookie anymore, which is kind of wild, because I still feel like I've fished a couple of years. But we're pretty financially stable with some stuff. You've got to do your part. You've not just fish, you've got to have logo stuff, but people need to entertain these, sponsors, clients. You need to do giveaways to take their people out. You need to do product videos. You need to give them value for whatever you're doing. And for every company, it's different. I mean, my title sponsor when I started, and I still work with them, is a salon and spa school, Douglas J. I've worked with them for 11 years. We just do some neat fundraisers for Juvenile Diabetes and Great Lakes Alliance. And their owner found a way to make it work with me, and we have a blast doing it. You know, a lot of the other stuff, fishing related, is easier to make sense. But when you first get going, you've got to network a lot. And I feel like that's why it helps that it takes time, because if you just start off, you don't have a network. As you're in the sport, you meet more people. And then it's all about, finding a way to make it work with the business partners that you have. And there's a lot of opportunity out there right now. And even for the guys in the middle, you can make some money and make it happen, but it's about getting there. And it takes time and struggle. I mean, that was a big part of my deal.
Once you win the big one, you're going to, it's just a matter of time, right? So what do you do? What do you have planned for yourself after that?
It's funny, because I still have the little paint company, and my guys joke, man, we getting a raise when you win the classic. I'm like, no, you're all fired. I'm done. I just joke them that they know, I'm going to show up to work, because I actually enjoy doing things. I joke with my wife too. I like making money. I want to plan for the future. The biggest hurdle with our sport is it's not like a 9-to-5 job where you keep making money. And when you retire, you're making the most money you've ever made typically, and you retire. Our sport, there's a window that you need to take advantage of. And typically it's, in that middle when you're still able to reach the youth, the next buying group that are 18 to 30 that are buying boats, motors, this and that. Mm-hmm. But then, eventually, unless you're one of those marquee guys, you might kind of start sliding off the radar. And that's when, some deals, might go down and whatnot. You need to be ready for that. I don't want to be in a position when I'm 55 that I feel like I have to fish. If I want to, let's roll. But I don't want to be out there fishing because I need to check.
Well, remember Ray Kroc, he started McDonald's when he was 56, right? And Colonel Sanders, I think he was about 1,000. So, I think you're just starting out.
Whatever works, man. Worked for him.
Awesome, man. Hey, tell everybody how they can find out more about you.
Yeah, you can follow me. I'm on Instagram a lot, Facebook, got a website. Everything's just at Chad Pipkins. You can find me. Do a lot of fun stuff with sponsors, follow along in the journey and appreciate everybody, you know, support what we do. It's just, it's, we're really lucky to get to do what we do, and don't take advantage of it any day. Just very, very grateful, and keep working hard at it. And that's why we get to do what we do.
That's the thing. You know, a lot of people, whether you're young or old, because I don't like to put limits on these things, you know, and you said, you know what, I would like to do that. How does that done? I mean, look at Chad Pipkins. I mean, he's right there, and and he's got his own business. This is the way I've seen it done before. There's another guy. He was in the military. He started selling houses. I won't name his name. He's a bass fisher. You know who I'm talking about. Yeah. You already know who I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yep. He's in the military, started selling houses, you know, then he got into bass fishing, you know, and a lot of these guys are doing that. And if you want to do it, look to Chad, because I think I'm an entrepreneur with other passions too. And I like that kind of story. So Thank you for sharing it today.
Appreciate it. You got to create your way.
That was Chad Pipkins of the Bassmaster Elite Series, Bass Fisherman Extraordinaire. Here is the ultimate quote about fishing. You all know me. You all know I earn a living. I'll catch this bird for you, but it's not going to be easy. It's bad fish. It's not like going down the pond catching bluegills or tommy cats. This shark, swallow you whole, shake you, tenderize you, down you go. And we got to do it fast. Put all your business back on a paying basis. But I value my butt more than $3,000, Chief. I'll find him for $3,000, but I'll catch him and kill him for $10,000. And you got to make up your minds. Want to ante up? Play it cheap and be on welfare the whole winter. I don't want any mates. There's too many damn captains on this island. That's $10,000 for me by myself. For that, you could have the fin, the tail, the whole damn thing. Thank you very much, Mr. Quint. We'll take it under advisement. Mr. Mayor, ladies and gentlemen. Well, that wasn't really a quote. That was more of me acting out a scene, and I didn't get the accent right in the beginning, but look forward to seeing you all in the next episode. All right. Have you guys been to longshotleaders.com? That's where you can check out all of the guests and the bios and the backgrounds and more. Also, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what we do, give us a good rating. Tell your family and friends to come by and listen. It's going to make you feel nice and toasty inside. Every week we'll be delivering knowledge, creativity, inspiration, exasperation, perspiration. If it ends with a shun, basically you're going to find it here. All right, thank you for joining us. And in the great words of Bill Murray in the movie Caddyshack, friends for life, I say.